All right, Gib.
What's going on, boys? Man, were ratings down up there or something? They brought you two in there.
They sold it to me as being the slowest sports week above all year, so they figured they were safe putting me on.
Gib, ratings are through the roof, and we're so embarrassed by them, we sought out a guest that people may wish to tune out. That's the truth of it.
You're not a guest, you're the host.
I'll do my best.
Hey, you got some big shoes to fill.
All right, so, okay, to me, there's no place for me here. I just want to sit back. Leap, did you have to babysit him? Like, what was Tim Leaper like as one of your coaches? Did you have to keep him under your thumb, or did he kind of run ragged? How did that all play out?
Oh, Leap, no. You know what? One thing about Timmy, man, you never had to worry about him. He was doing his job. No, I'm not, all honesty, I'm not on here on this show to stroke him. But you're not going to find you might need that, but I'm not going to do it. But you're not going to find a better coach, better baseball guy around. You're really not. And, you know, he, in reality, should have been a manager. You know, but as far as versed in the game, all different positions on the field, all the stuff, you know, you're not going to find a better one around. And I say that sincerely. So, yeah, he's one of those guys. And really, our whole staff was like that. You knew they were doing their job. You knew there were going to be no shortcuts. But they also had a feel of the game. They knew when to, you know, hard charge, and they knew when to back off. And just good guys. You know, players enjoyed them and made my job easy, you know. And I had very – you know, one thing, you know, the manager gets – you know, he's kind of in the spotlight. The coaches do all the work. I mean, they really do. And, you know, they don't get the credit they deserve, but they're the guys behind the scenes where the manager's just sitting there BSing with you guys in the media, you know, just trying to put a good face on them, whatever it is.
And I'm going to say, too, for me, and thanks, Gib, that was nice. Working for Gib was great. Like, I'm not a guy, and as you're figuring out this week, Scotty Mac thinks, that – I'm not a guy that takes direction very well. So, like you know, Gibby was awesome because he let you do your job, and he had faith and he had confidence. Yeah, and there was a few times I can remember Steve Tolleson trying to steal third base in Anaheim one time, and they got in, and I got the look, and you were great, man. You never said anything, but like you just didn't want to let it happen. But the reason why you didn't want to let it happen is because he let us work, and you know what. And I've said this all week, you know, 5 years for me, and Gibbs was there six the second time, to go to work every day with guys that you like, you know, you trust, you can have a good time with, like, then, man, that's invaluable in this game. Because how many times did we see staffs that didn't get along and they're, you know, they're backstabbing each other all year and there's too much at stake, you spend way too much time together, there's too much pressure. That there's absolutely no fun in that job when it's like that.
Exactly.
Gib, do you... As you sit here right now, do you miss it? Do you miss the day-in, day-out grind?
I don't really miss the grind. You know, I miss the people, you know, the players, the coaches. You know, even some of you guys in the media. You know, I did enjoy that part of the game. You miss the competition. You know, the grind of being here, you know, every day, hitting the road, what have you. You know, I don't really miss that. But, you know, when... you know, Leap and I have been in the game a long time. You know, you build a lot of friendships. You get used to the routine of it all. You know, and it's our life. You know, neither one of us have ever had to grow up. You know, we're playing a kid's game and get paid money to do it. So it's, and there's a lot of truth to that. You know, I mean, we can still act like idiots and be kids. I do miss that part. I miss all the friends that I was with a long time. But really the competition. That's what always kind of drives us because, you know, most of the guys that are coaches turn into coaches were ex-players, so they're used to that part of it too, and then just carries over.
How much do you think the manager's role has changed over, I mean, I don't really know the period of time, even the last 5 years, if we go smaller, maybe 10, 15 years. Like when you first got the gig in 04, John, as compared to what the expectations seem to be in 2018. Give me some differences.
Well, you know, Scotty, to answer that fairly, you know, I got to tell you, I don't know how everybody does it now. You know, I'll tell you about, you know, how we did it, you know, that I was involved with. But, you know, I hear things throughout baseball, you know, with, you know, front offices are really heavily involved now. You know, to what extent different teams, I couldn't tell you, but I do know, you know, they're more involved than ever. You know, when I first started out in Toronto, JP hired me, JP Ricciardi. And basically it was, you know, he came from Oakland, went back then, you know, the money ball, the draw your walks, hit home runs, you know, that thing was, they were kind of at the forefront of all that. And so he came from that organization, and he was looking for those kind of players, you know. But he told me, hey, run the game the way you see fit, you know, you good sense, you know. And that's every manager's dreams, you know, because if you're going to be held accountable, or you're going to be asked questions on why you did certain things, you want to be able to do it your way. Now, I'm not so sure that takes place everywhere nowadays, though. I think that's where the game's changed, you know, with all the analytics. You know, I don't know how many, but I do know there's some teams that, you know, they run down the lineup every night. You know, me, myself, I couldn't do that, to be honest with you. I mean, there's no if you know, if I'm the manager of your team, and I can't make out a lineup the way I think is best suited, you know, you probably got the wrong guy, or you probably shouldn't have anybody doing it, you know? So, I mean, those kind of things. But I was fortunate. The guys I worked for, they should basically say, hey, you know, usually we hired you for a reason. It's like we were talking about the coaches. You get hired to do a job. You're going to be held accountable. So you might as well do it the way you should be able to do it the best you can. And, otherwise, well, I mean, if you're doing it the way you think somebody else would do it, and then you get held accountable, that makes zero sense to me. So, but you know, I had some arguments with JP and Alex along the way, where you know, we'd always discuss the game when it was over. You know, not every day, but you know, maybe the next day, just talk, you know, just I think there was more baseball being talked back then, you know, instead of all numbers. You know, the ins and outs of the game, the instincts of the game, the, you know, the personalities involved, and the confidence level of the players. Everything just wasn't a number. And so we'd have our agreements and disagreements on that. And I told both those guys a few times, hey, if you don't like the job I'm doing, find somebody else. And that would piss them off a little bit. But I meant it. I said, you know, if you don't like the way I'm doing it, why the heck would you, you know, why wouldn't you get the great guy, you know? And we were all great friends. It was nothing personal to that. So, I think a lot of that's missing from the game now. The give and take, maybe the relationships between the managers and GMs is a little bit different, and that, you know, it carries down to the coaching staff.
Hey, Gib, I've never asked you this, and just looking back, and when things, and I've been talking about this all week, just been asked the question, but and as far as things at turning points, obviously everyone points to the trades and stuff. That was great, but for me, the biggest turning point for us, and I don't know what your thoughts were, when we were in Washington, we played that day-night doubleheader, and we were kind of bottomed out. Like, for me, that is the whole turning point of our season, of our careers here in Toronto. What was your feeling like after we dropped that first game in Washington, and we came back in the nightcap? Obviously, Pilar hit the two home runs off Scherzer, but, like, is that your turning point, or do you have a different one, and what was your feeling that day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Lee, that was, if I remember correctly, you know, there was so many years. I think it was that year you're talking about. But anyway, you start off this way. There's no doubt, because you know, I think we went on to win 11 in a row after that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
11 in a row.
Yep.
And, yeah, and we were reeling. Yeah, we came in there, we had that rain out, and, you know, there was I had a little conflict with one of the players. Me and Eddie got into a disagreement at the time over something. I was going to give him a day off, and he came out and worked. You know, that good loving stuff to happen behind the scenes. So anyway, the game ends up getting rained out, so we got that doubleheader next day. And yeah, it was who shut us out that night? And he's with Detroit now.
It was Scherzer,
Zimmerman did Zimmerman
Zimmerman ended up beating us. He might have shut us out. Low scoring game, and then You know, see, things aren't looking good to begin with. You know, when that happened, going into that series, because, I mean, they were maybe the best team in baseball viewed that way. And we were facing all the top pitching. Yeah, then, of course, Pilar stepped up out of nowhere. You know, I mean, you don't expect things like that. Then wasn't the final game Burley's hour and a half game? And you got got a hit, broke up a double play.
Oh yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, I think that was the final night there, so we got out of there early. But I gotta agree with you. I never really sat there and looked at, but I knew. I think we did. We've been going 10-11 games in a row, and that really kind of, got our heads back above water. But it's funny. I think this is the trip. I was taking a shower after that final series. We're heading home, and somebody walks in. I don't remember who it was, and said, "Hey, the news around Toronto is they're going to fire you when we get back." I said, "Really?" I said, I'm feeling good at the time. You know, we just won two big games, and I said, "Well, I asked the person." I said, "Well, we'll make some calls up there, find out. Alex would be the GM."
Yeah.
He said, "Find out. Otherwise, I'm not getting another plane going to Toronto here. I'll stay here overnight. I'll catch a flight back home. No need going back there if it's going to happen tomorrow." And, there's some calls made. Everybody said, "Oh, that's BS, blah, blah, blah." But I guess it was out on the, how you radio nerds do it, man. You guys fire out those trial balloons like the politicians or something, you know, and check the pulse before you make a decision. You know, that's gutless. I don't know why people do that, you know? Anyway, so yeah, and then anything that we took off, but I do think, Leap, you remember well that year in 15, you know, I mean, we could flat out hit, man. We were never out of a game, but we were shaky defensively.
Yep.
You know, we were playing some infielders in the outfield.
Yes.
And then we made the big deal. And I think the key part of that whole thing was Tulowitzki playing shortstop. You know, Reyes was having a tough time, you know. God bless him, but it caught up with him, and his range was down. Tulo came in, and it was like night and day. You know, balls weren't trickling through the infield. It cost us, and then, you know, Price and then a couple of bullpen pieces, and, you know, we caught fire. Yeah. But, yeah, you go back. There's some turning points if you look at it seriously earlier in the year. That's like any baseball season. You know, there's certain things that happen. You don't realize it at the time, but when you do look, you know, that could have gone one way or the other way. You know, the season could have really turned sour, or maybe you kept your head above water until something else happened that you took off. And I think I have to agree with you, Lee, simply because you're so smart.
Well, Gib, I'll just jump in here before Leap picks back up. The fact that you've called Leap a radio nerd really cements his transition to the dark side.
That was not meant for me at all. That was totally meant for you. Like, come on. You know that.
Isn't he just a special guest this weekend? Is he a full-timer? That's, is he full-time now?
No, not full-time. And hey, working with Scott for a week, there's no chance I want to do this. Are you kidding me? I can't wait to run away from here.
There is reason they put certain people on TV and certain people on radio, yeah, you know, for the cameras, I guess, and all that. But wow. some of the radio shows are televised. You guys on the air?
I think we're from a distance. It's like the Zapruder film.
Well, based on the lights that are on in here, there's something going on. There's something going on. With John Gibbons, I want to ask you both because you lived it. And Gib, okay, what year were you drafted by the Mets?
1980.
Okay, so I'm terrible at math here. So that was 39 years ago. Leap, what was your first year of pro ball?
1985.
Okay, so combined, the two of you have
a lot of years.
75-ish years in professional baseball. Was the seventh inning of the fifth game of the 2015 American League Division Series, the bat flip, was that the craziest inning of baseball you both have ever been a part of? Or do you have something that stands out that might have been even crazy?
Let me go first, Gibbs. I coach winter ball. You know, I really had to grind it. I coach winter ball. So there are some really interesting moments there. But like in terms of it being just a surreal moment and then like having it slow down and living in it and being a part of something that you realize was huge for a city and huge in baseball at the time. Yeah, that was probably one of the, I'm going to say, the coolest moments. Like, and again, I took a step back and kind of enjoyed it, you know, not so much as a coach, but just as a guy who had a really good seat for these things, you know, except for the fact I had to dodge beer cans. But it was a really special moment. And I don't know what you felt in the dugout.
Yeah, you're not going to beat that. You know, that's going to go down in history. And yeah, in Leaf and I were right there in the arena, you know, and you know, everybody witnessed that. And, you know, I will say, you know, I was with the 86 Mets when they won the, you know, came back and beat the Red Sox. I wasn't on the active playoff roster, but I was down there catching the bullpen. And, you know, I mean, at first I wasn't warming anybody up, as you could see things developing. You know, two quick outs, and then, oh, something weird going on here. And then they called down, and I said, hey, you know, get a pitcher going in case this game's tied. You know, of course, that was a World Series. I mean, Boston, I mean, that game should have been over. They should have been champions again. So, yeah, those are, you know, the difference is that, you know, I was involved more with the one here in 15 with the Blue Jays team. And, you know, I wasn't quite as involved with that Mets one. But it was just, I'm convinced sometimes there's things that happen in baseball. The baseball guys get involved. You know, they take care of man. They take care of the right people sometimes. You know, we've all, you know, if you've been in baseball as long as Leap and I have, you know, I mean, there's a lot of heartbreaks, man, a lot of heartache. A lot of times your best league plans don't work, and sometimes when you don't expect much, something crazy happens, you know. And that's why, you know, every day I think you give it your honest, a good honest day's work and try to do things right, and try to treat people right, do all that. And you take the good and the bad, and you know, I'm sure we can both say there's been many more good, but you know, that's a memory that'll stick with you know, Leap and I and the rest of the coaching staff, and shoot, all the fans in Canada forever, you know, until we can't remember it anymore.
The top of that inning. So Russ's throw deflects off of Shin Soo Choo's bat. Rougned Odor comes down the line, scores to give Texas the 3-2 lead. Leap, you're in the dugout as well, because it's a defensive half inning. What did you understand about that moment? What were you wondering about? What were you thinking? What the heck just happened?
Yeah, and that was in a dugout, what's the rule?
Like, yeah.
This is the great thing about baseball. Why can't you get young people to play baseball? Like, try to explain the rules to them. Here we are in the American League Division Series, and we didn't know what the rule was. And I just didn't know. Allegedly, I guess the only guy who knew the rule in the ballpark was Jeff Banister. That didn't really work out that he knew the rule that well, but he was. So but that's, we were in the dugout, go, hey, what's the rule here? What's the rule here? And I don't know, from your standpoint, you had to go out and argue it, but did you know what you were arguing?
No, I didn't know the rule. I had never seen it. And I went out there, and I said, surely, I'm thinking, surely it's got to be a dead ball, you know? But you know, it wasn't. So I think Dale Scott was the home plate umpire, and he was confused too. Because I mean, there's so many rules, and you don't see them so long. Even I mean, sometimes you may never see something happen, and you're scratching your head. What is the rule? And the same applies to the umpires. Because I can remember a real quick story. I hate to sidetrack. You'll get back, but I can remember there was a game, my first stint up there. And we batted out of order, right? Playing Seattle, and it was Aaron Hill and Lyle Overbay. They hit out of order and won a minute double. And so John McLaren was man in Seattle. He comes out there and, you know, says, no, the bat hit out of order. So we got together with the umpires behind the home plate, me and him, and one of the best, most senior umpires in the league was the crew chief. And we're sitting back there with four umpires and us two. And everybody's going, now, all right, are we supposed to do this guy in here? And I don't know. And you talk about some of the best umpires in baseball because it's such a rare play. So it goes back to that. I'm sure the majority of people had never seen that actually happen or even remembered it. But they ended up getting it right, thank God. But then, like it was said, you know, sometimes the right things happen in baseball. And then we came back and took the lead. I mean, you know, Texas had a heck of a team, you know, and then they had some miscues on the field that shouldn't happen. But, you know, under pressure, and that place was rocking, you know. I mean, and, you know, things just fell in line for the old Blue Jays and, you know, the way it was supposed to, I think.
John, I remember, and we're with John Gibbons on Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I remember talking to your old pal, R.A. Dickey, and I asked him, I said, because you guys had beaten Texas and advanced to play Kansas City, I said, down 2-0 going to Arlington, like, what were you thinking? And he said to me, I knew we were okay when I got on the bus and Munenori Kawasaki was singing and dancing. he said, I knew we were going to win the next three games. Kawasaki didn't care. Kawasaki had a role.
Oh, yeah. I figured you might say Dickie would sit. I got on the bus. I didn't see Gibbons sitting there, and I heard he resigned, and so I knew we were in good shape. So that's what you're going to say.
We were all saying that.
Hey, Mooney, man, you know what? He was a special guy. You know, he came along at the right time. You know, he'd do anything for a team. You know, and he did a lot of good things for our team. He really did. But, all great teams, you know, a lot of times there's one character, sometimes more, you know, there's just, or some oddball, whatever it is. It's kind of your mascot or whatever you want to call it, or a go-to guy. And Mooney was that, you know, he spoke very little English or French, you know, so that was double trouble. but he had a way of lightening the mood. But he was a pretty good player too. It wasn't just like he was just, you know, some guy out there, but I used to marvel. He wouldn't be in a game, and in between innings, we didn't have our catcher wasn't ready to go out there. He just used to go out to the field and to warm up the pitcher, and he'd get these great big old cheers, you know. It's like this is amazing, you know. He was almost more popular than Batista and all them guys. It seemed like with the reception he got, you know.
I remember him playing catch with kids down the left field line at Fenway Park before a Sunday game, day game, gorgeous day in Boston, and he was, you know. Gibb, this young core of Blue Jays will develop its own personality. And typically personality ends up becoming defined once you become a winning group. Because you're winning more than you're losing. You're confident. I don't know if this is going to be a team of strutters, if it's going to be a team of quiet confidence, whatever. We'll let Kevin and Vladdy and Bo and Lourdes and all those guys figure that out over time. But as I've said to Leap on the air and off air over the last week, I miss the personalities of the heyday teams of 15 and 16. I miss getting glared at by Jose Bautista when I approached him at his locker. I miss wondering if Josh Donaldson was in a good mood or a bad mood that day to deal with the media. I miss Edwin Encarnacion and his very placid and even-keeled personality. You had a sense that as understated as he seemed to be publicly, he had a massive, massive role with that group. Just these different personalities, these elite athletes who put it all together, didn't win the ultimate prize, but took us on a pretty cool 15-month ride.
Oh, yeah, they sure did. It was a unique bunch. I'm going to tell you right now, Scott, you're not going to win anything with a bunch of choir boys. It's just not going to happen. Now, our kids wouldn't, you know, end up that way, you know, do everything right, be the model citizens, all that. But in professional athletics, you're never going to get that, you know. And if you are all that way, you're probably not going to be very good. I think you need some loose cannons because it's an emotional ride. It's an emotional sport. You're doing it every day. So in reality, I think you need the ups and downs. You know, I think it sparks everybody. You know, it kind of, you know, it's not that mundane. Every day is the same. Yeah, I think you want to be steady in your approach. But I think there needs to be some blow-ups, whether it's from the players, you know, the coaching staff, everybody. You know, everybody's got to know that everybody's got a heartbeat, you know. And it's like a family, you know. I mean, that doesn't always go along smoothly. And sometimes your best players are your loose cannons, you know. That's what motivates them. They think a little different. They their mind works different, the great players. And they're volatile, a lot of them. You know, and they get so locked into what they're doing that they get frustrated very easily and things like that. Those are the blow-ups. Those are the mood swings and the pressures of the game, doing it every day. You know, it takes its toll on these guys. But I think the great ones are wired differently. And Leap and I got a chance to look at a lot of really good ones. I think even the coaches like Leap, you know, I mean, they're wired a little different too now. So it's not always the outside looking in. You know, sometimes they're looking at us that way too. Every team will take on its own personality. There's no doubt about it. But I guarantee you look over history, a lot of great teams. But mentioned earlier, that 86 Mets team, I've never seen anything like that. You know, but one thing they did they showed up to play every night, man. They showed up to win. They fight each other. They fight the other teams, whatever. And then they would live very, very hard. But every night they showed up with one thing in mind, and that was to win. And you know, one of the best teams ever, I think. So, and that's kind of standard in baseball with the really good teams. And a lot of it has to do with you're out there every day. Some people, you get tired of each other, you know, and there's some blow ups. But really, and from your end of it, in the media, that's got to be, yeah, I agree with you. That's got to be exciting. It's not the same old dull routine every day, you know, the straight cookie answer, you know, yeah, you know, I feel great, man, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I've been living life all week, man. It's unbelievable.
You know, everybody's, I think, a little bit more guarded what they say nowadays, you know, with social media and all that. But, you know, I mean, I think you guys would like to cover, you know, bigger, you know, personalities. It makes your job funner. You know, you put it this way, you never know what to expect.
No question. We'll send you an MP3 of this conversation, John, so that you can take it to the sports radio station in San Antonio. The John Gibbons Show. I can hear it. I can hear it now. Plunk you in a chair, put a microphone in front of your face, give you 3 hours, 5 days a week, and just see what happens. Why not?
What are we going to title it? Remember the Alamo or what?
Well, the John Gibbons Show.
Hey, quick question for you guys up there. You know, what's been the reception with Kawhi Leonard, you know, leaving? Because, you know, he was a Spur, so I knew him a little bit from that. I don't know him, but I followed him, and then I saw what he helped do in Toronto. Is the reception been okay?
I think generally speaking, it has been. I think there will be an appreciation of him forever for what he did. I mean, I view him, right, Gibb, as like a bit of a mythical figure. It's like 30 years from now, you're telling the next generation about something that happened. It's like, hey, this guy arrived. He stayed for 9 or 10 months, and he brought the city a glory it hadn't seen before in that sport, and then he left. And it, right, you talk about it really happened, but it almost feels surreal, as if it didn't.
I don't know how much you got a chance to watch it. To sit here and watch him on this stage play every day the way he did, and how much he truly elevated people's games. And, you know, they've been the conference championship here a couple times, and probably thought they had it. But, like, to watch what he did to guys, the absolute calmness in which this guy played the basketball game, nothing was ever forced in the biggest moments. And that, you saw it, like, literally carry over to everybody. And it was, like, the most impressive. I have time to watch this stuff now. So it was absolutely, it was awesome to watch.
He's different. Well, you know, that final shot of the game to beat Philly was kind of like one of the, you know, the basketball gods were there, man. It was almost, this season's supposed to end this way for the Raptors. And that's just, I believe in some of that.
It was awesome. This was a great chat, Gibb. Always fun. Continued well wishes.
I miss you guys up there in the Great White North.
Well, you're always invited to come visit.
Well, actually, I'm going next week to the Hall of Fame, for the Halliday induction.
Awesome. That's great.
Not quite Toronto, but it's close.
Yeah. Well, stop on by. Jump on the 401, drive up, and hopefully we can get together for a visit.
We'll make MacArthur by breakfast this time.
Oh,
yeah. He's seen him cower right there. It was unbelievable. I deflated him.
Jeez, I'm busy.
Dude, you got Howie Friley arms right there.
Alligator arms.
Gator.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Well, I miss you guys, man. Keep up the great work.